You are listening to Raising the Bar with Conasec and Dillon. Join us for a lively and informative conversation on hot legal topics. Call or email us with your legal questions at raisingthebar@wgnradio.com.
Welcome to Raising the Bar. My name is David Hochberg. I am going to be here in studio with Amir, pronounce the last name.
Thomas B.
And Amanda Hamilton. Welcome back, Amanda.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Welcome, Amir.
Thank you very much.
So, Amir, you're a rookie here, so we're going to break in real quick. We're going to be talking about the First Amendment, okay? Sticks and stones, just how you feel about how free is your speech is what the topic is. And there's been a lot of conversation about that in the news lately, about especially after the political go-around that we just had and people saying stuff that wasn't necessarily true. And my daughters would ask me, how can they say, and my wife was asking me, and my daughters, my 11-year-old daughter is going, because one of my friends was running for Congress, Congressman Dold, and I'm like, and I'm watching these ads, and I'm like, and they're lying. Okay, what they're saying is not true. And my wife's like, well, how can they do it? And we're going to get into that because I don't know how they did it. All right. And the Democrats spent a ton of money against a friend of mine, mischaracterizing him. And the Republicans do the same thing. Okay. It goes back and forth. And I want to talk about that because I don't know how they do it and how they can get away with it. So we're here, Ms. Hamilton. Why don't you introduce yourself, Amanda?
Oh, well, I'm an attorney at Conasec and Dillon. And actually studied international business, economics, and communication at Augustana College. And while I was a student at Augustana, I interned for the Bush 43 White House. I worked under George W. Bush. And I worked with the late, great Tony Snow in the press office, who was a phenomenal human being. And then after graduation, I actually worked at the U.S. Department of State under the leadership of Secretary Condoleezza Rice, also a phenomenal human being. And then after that, I went to law school over at Northern Illinois University.
The Harvard of the Midwest.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Go Huskies. Graduated in 1988. Amir, you went to a small school in the Midwest in South Bend, I think, Notre Dame?
Is that? Yeah, it's a
small Catholic haven. Yeah, they got a little football team there. I think play a little basketball, too?
A little bit of basketball. A few people have heard of their basketball team.
Yeah, I think they got a game this weekend against a local team.
Yeah, Northwestern. Big game for the Chicagoland area.
So it should be good. And where'd you graduate law school?
I went to Valparaiso University for law school, finished in 2002, and have been practicing law ever since.
And how long have you been at Conasec Dillon?
You know, I started with Conasec and Dillon, so I've been there almost 10 years now.
All right. Well, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, we usually sacrifice the rookie in the first 10 minutes of the show, so get ready.
Good luck.
Phone lines are open, 312-521-8600. 312-521-8600 is the phone and text line. This show is sponsored by Conasec and Dillon, the law offices of Conasec and Dillon. You could visit their website, ConasecDillonLaw.com, ConasecDillonLaw.com. ConasecDillonLaw.com is their website. You could also call them at their office, which is located at 21 West State Street in Geneva, 630-262-9655, 630-262-9655. Let's start out. Let's throw it to you, Amir. What is the First Amendment and what does it stand for?
Well, the First Amendment, it was the initial amendment that was created with the first five, and it protects our right for freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of expression. And a lot of people think that the First Amendment is the most crucial amendment in our Constitution. You know, coming up here today, I saw you guys have a lot of quotes, appropriately so, about the First Amendment.
In the Tribune Tower lobby.
Exactly.
They're great quotes. If anybody listening, if you want to see some history, that's one of the most beautiful lobbies in all of the city of Chicago, with the quotes etched right in the stone.
It is, and there was one particular that I saw from Voltaire, which some people may know was a philosopher from way back in the day, where he said, I may not agree with what you're saying, but I'll fight to the death to defend it.
Right.
And that kind of epitomizes the First Amendment for me. You know, people don't agree with what people say, but it's so important to allow people to express their opinions, to express their religion, and the First Amendment here in this great country gives us the ability to do that.
All right, so we're going to throw it to you, Amanda. You worked in Washington. You worked in the White House, for God's sakes. Okay. You worked at Ground Zero. You were steps away from the Oval Office. You were at the epicenter of everything that is everything, which must have been just an unbelievable learning experience and just an experience in and of itself being at the White House. I mean,
absolutely,
how cool was that?
It was very humbling, and I was very grateful for the opportunity because I learned a lot.
I can imagine. Wow.
I was around a lot of very, very highly intelligent people, so lots of great mentors. But one thing that I was always most impressed with, both at the White House and at the State Department, when I was at the State Department with Secretary Rice, I also worked with the press secretary there. So we had two different press pools. At the White House, we had the White House press pool. And then at the State Department, we had foreign correspondents as well. And one thing that I was always so impressed with there, and with our government, really, is that, you know, you're used to seeing like the televised press conferences mm-hmm. where the press secretary stands up behind the podium. He's got the seal in the background. Or she, because I know Dana Perino was also a White House press secretary for a while. But one thing I was always so impressed with is every morning, and a lot of people don't know this, every morning, the press secretary for the White House and for the U.S. Department of State will actually meet with a lot of those reporters. And if there's a certain topic that those reporters want information on that the press secretary doesn't have information readily available, the press secretary will actually make a note of it and make sure to get the answer in time for the press conference.
A little pregame.
Well, it's not to say that everything's rehearsed, because it's not, but it's just sort of giving him a heads up of, hey, we're going to ask you about certain topics and we expect answers. It's almost the press department at these different agencies are accountable to the press. And they're expected to go, hey, if you don't have the answer now, that's fine, but you better get it by the time of the press conference, because I'm going to ask it and I'm going to demand some information. And I just thought that was very symbolic of the way this country really is run, that it's the government really is accountable to its people. And sometimes it doesn't feel that way. But that was just one small demonstration of how I think the First Amendment, especially with freedom of the press and freedom of speech, is that individuals and reporters don't have to be afraid of their government. They actually have the right to come in and say, hey, I have questions that need answering. Mm-hmm. And the people deserve answers on these things. And, well, and the press secretaries would go back and get the information.
And it's a lot different than what happened overseas this past week, where I guess a New York Times or New York Post reporter asked a question of the leader of China or one of their top. I didn't really follow the story, and they basically about trade laws, whatever. And the leader of China basically looked the other way and completely ignored the reporter. So now if that happened here in the White House press room, you'd have Fox and everybody else, Amir, start chomping your Rush Limbaughs and the Michael Savages and all the lunatics out there, right? Fox News would go crazy, and it would be red meat thrown into a lion's den, and they'd be chewing up the press secretary to get the answer. We don't seem to have that problem here. And do you think that that's a good thing, or do we push it too much with our freedoms too much?
No, the freedoms of speech, I mean, they've been critical to all the good changes, the First Amendment, that have come through in this country. I mean, it starts with the civil rights movement, right? That's what everybody thinks of. What an amazing country this has become because of the civil rights movement. And without the First Amendment, without the freedom of speech, we wouldn't see that movement. And just like you were talking about, in other countries, they can ignore a question that goes right to the heart of what people are concerned about. And when they ignore it, what happens? Nothing happens about it, and they don't face any repercussions. Here, our politicians, our citizens, everyone's held accountable for what they're doing. And the reason being is that us as citizens can express how we feel about what's going on and what our beliefs are. And that's what's made this country so great.
You want to add something?
I think ignoring the question is one thing, but in a lot of countries, you see much worse than it being ignored. In some countries, if you ask the wrong question,
get your head cut off.
Absolutely. You'll find yourself in prison. You'll find yourself silenced. Mm-hmm. And
well, having your head cut off kind of solves that problem. Yeah.
Well, yes, but
or your tongue cut out.
Yes,
I'm not even trying to be funny. I mean, that's what happens.
Absolutely, okay? And I think it's a freedom that I certainly take for granted on a day to day basis. But I think a lot of people too, if you really stop and think about, you know, that we do live in a place where you can voice your opinion and not be afraid that someone's going to come get you in the night and take you away from your family and friends. You know, people have disappeared overseas for saying the wrong things or for questioning the wrong government officials. Whereas here, even though sometimes it borders on disrespectful and sometimes it's inflammatory and sometimes sometimes I hear things that really make me mad, or, you know, you were talking a little bit about political advertising. Sometimes it really, can just get old when you're hearing the same negative ads and oh my goodness. But at the end of the day, if you kind of think back on it and say, you know what, I'm actually really glad I live in a country where
somebody can lie about somebody else's record and well, spend $8 million doing
it. Not lie. And we'll get to that later on in the show, I think, about some of the consequences when you've got false statements of fact being made. But just being able to live in a country where you're allowed to express your opinions without fear of punishment.
All right, 312-521-8600, phone line, text line. Listening to Raising the Bar, sponsored by the law offices of Konasek and Dillon. You could visit their website, konasekdillonlaw.com, KonasekDillonLaw.com. You could call their law offices located off of West Street in Geneva. Beautiful downtown Geneva, if you will, right by the river. 630-262-9655. 630-262-9655. Amir and Amanda are in here from the law offices of Konasek and Dillon. So I got a text message here from the 312-521-8600. What requirements does the government have to meet in order to regulate somebody's speech? You know, because obviously this texter's got a problem with people regulating speech. So if the government wants to regulate speech, let's throw it to you, Amanda, first, and then we'll have you add on, Amir. What type of steps does the government have to do in order to regulate somebody's speech, if they even can regulate somebody's speech?
Well, I think that's a really good question. Because it's it's such an important right, the government will look at things a little bit closer to determine whether or not the regulation is fair and whether or not the regulation is actually violating one of your most fundamental rights.
Are these regulations set at not only the national level, they can be at the local level as well, right?
Correct. Because, well, your First Amendment right is protected through the 14th Amendment, the Due Process Clause, and in a sense, so that basically the 14th Amendment says that any right that's being protected under the Bill of Rights by the federal government is also applicable to state action.
Okay.
So, for example, it's not just something that the federal government can't silence me, neither can the state of Illinois,
okay,
for lack of a better explanation. No. But anyway, so sometimes what the courts will do is they'll look at three main issues when they're looking at a regulation or something that's meant to curtail speech. So, for example, if the state of Illinois passes an ordinance or passes a law that somehow limits or restricts speech, but the first thing the courts will look at is the regulation vague? Because if it's vague or if it's sort of indeterminate, you need to, the people need to know exactly what type of speech is being restricted. What are we allowed to do this? Are we not? It needs to be pretty clear, especially when you're dealing with something so important. The second thing that they need to look at is whether the regulation is overly broad. They really want to make sure that if you're going to pass a regulation that's going to restrict speech, it needs to be very, very narrowly tailored, because you don't want to restrict more speech than is substantially necessary to advance the public interest or whatever it is. And then the third thing is they want to make sure that the courts or the government doesn't have what they call unfettered discretion. And what that means is there have to be defined standards. They don't want it being kind of decided on a willy-nilly basis of, okay, is the governor in a good mood or a bad mood today? Is the speech going to be allowed or not? They really want it to be very specific, so that way you don't run into situations where people are confused as to whether or not they're breaking the law or confused as to whether or not they can express themselves, because if that situation occurs, then you'll have what's sometimes referred to as a chilling effect, mm-hmm. where people are so afraid that they might be violating the law that they'll then start to cut back on their own expression.
Amir?
Yeah, the critical thing is also that the government can't regulate what is said. They can only regulate the time, the manner, and the place. And then that goes into just what Amanda was saying. How can they regulate the time, the manner, and the place in those instances that Amanda was talking about? One example recently, actually, just June of this year, there was a Supreme Court case came down involving abortion clinics. And there was a state law in, I think it was Massachusetts, where they said you can't protest in abortion clinics 30 feet around the center.
Yeah,
and
boy, did that blow up. I mean, that on both sides.
Both sides.
You know,
it's a sensitive
weren't
issue.
Happy. I'm just like, okay, well, at least everybody's PO'd over this one. I mean, you know, it's like nobody won there. And, you know, because I was listening to WCPT, which is a liberal station, and I was listening to all the red meat, you know, conservative stations here on the conservative side. And I was like, wow, everybody's upset. There wasn't like nobody was happy with the decision, but a decision came down that we all have to live with. Like
right.
Obamacare, we all, you know, not a lot of people were happy and a lot of people were unhappy. With this one, it seemed like, well, 30 feet or whatever it is isn't enough, and we should be able to. It was like crazy.
Everybody was upset. You put it exactly right. Both sides, the liberals, the conservatives, people.
Right.
It was a mess. But, you know, the Supreme Court, right, the decision did protect the First Amendment. You know, they said the law was unconstitutional, and they said, you know, they can restrict it just in a manner that Amanda was talking about, and they didn't do it in the least restrictive means.
Well, and another interesting aspect of that decision, that was the McCollin v. Coakley decision, if anybody wanted to actually go read the opinion, because it's a very interesting opinion. But one thing that the Supreme Court justices really focused on was that the regulation actually extended onto public sidewalks and part of the street. And there's this really beautiful language in there about how public sidewalks and public streets have always had a sort of symbolic importance,
sure,
of having free speech. You know, that the people need to feel free to stand out in public on a public sidewalk or street
thoroughfare or whatever. Right.
Absolutely. So the whole buffer zone, in theory, you can understand why some people thought it was a good idea to try and create this sort of like neutral zone. But then when you actually examine it and sort of the overarching complications that are kind of arising from that decision, I think that's why the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do a buffer zone when you're impeding on someone's right to stand on a public street or a public sidewalk.
And, you know, you take it all the way back to pre-revolution Boston, right? Where did everything happen?
Right.
At the ports, on the quote-unquote streets or roadways for, you know, or the mud.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, you didn't have, you know, asphalt and concrete, you know, rebarred thoroughfares there. We had dirt streets where goods were coming in, and you had the horses and the buggies and you know, taking the goods from the ports and off the ships. And, you know, and when people got upset, what did they do? We had the Boston Tea Party, and, you know, where do you go? You march in the street, and you're with your signs and your muskets, and you start taking out some British soldiers, and we have a revolution. That's the David Hochberg Cliff Notes version of the way
of the American Revolution.
But I want to start with you. I with the follow up question here to this. How do the courts evaluate whether a regulation is constitutional or not? Because there's a lot of gray area, just like Amanda said, with the public sidewalks and the public thoroughfares. And again, I know it's a loaded question because you're not a Supreme Court justice. Hopefully one day you are.
Not yet, David.
Not yet. And then I could say of the conversation that we had here, and I could say, I knew Amir when. But how do the courts sort this out?
Well,
and how do attorneys look at this? Because you get 10 attorneys in a room and you got 100 different opinions.
Right.
Okay, in all due respect, I love attorneys, but, you know, they could take one sentence and turn it into flipping 15 volumes. But how do you put your arms around, how does the layperson put their arms around something like this?
Sure. You know, it actually, the Supreme Court and the kind of the evolution of the cases on what you can regulate under the First Amendment. In other words, how do you interpret this First Amendment so people can't do and say whatever they want, wherever they want, but yet they can still do and say whatever they want, wherever they want.
Right.
And it comes down to, you know, you got to look at each situation and each regulation. And it's a very lawyerly-like answer, and I apologize for giving it. But that's what the Supreme Court does. They take a look at the regulation, and they say, does it make sense to allow somebody their right to freedom of speech, but yet where you're not disrupting, disrespecting the public good, causing violence where it's not necessary? Because as you can see in the language of the First Amendment itself, it talks about peaceful protests,
right,
and peaceful freedom of speech. So I can't really directly answer your question to say the law says X on what regulations can and cannot be imposed on speech. But I can tell you this, that from a layperson's perspective, I mean, you can just take a step back, which the Supreme Court does, and say, listen, does this make sense to allow somebody to express themselves and at the same time not create public harm? That's the best way to answer it.
Amanda?
Well, I think, first of all, the fact that you love lawyers, I'm surprised and impressed, because I think you could usually fit our fan club in a phone booth.
Right on top of my Hanukkah list.
That's great.
17 lawyers.
Yeah.
Then my accountant.
I'm fairly certain my mother would have much preferred I be a pediatrician or something nice. But anyway, the interesting thing about the Supreme Court and what they have to do, you know, the symbol for justice is always the scales. You always see that as in terms of, you know, on law firm letterhead and whatnot. And I think the reason for that is because actually what the courts have to do, and especially in evaluating the First Amendment and decisions and regulations that seek to curtail the First Amendment, it's always a balancing act. They always have to balance the importance of the regulation, whatever the purpose of that regulation is, with the, you know, very important speech rights. So they're kind of balancing both the public interest that would be served by the regulation with the individual interest in having their freedom of speech.
So I want to give a couple examples. You're listening to Raising the Bar. The show is sponsored by the law offices of Konosik and Dillon. You can visit their website, konosikdillonlaw.com, KonosikDillonLaw.com. Office is located off of West State Street in Geneva. 630-262-9655 is the phone number. And you could visit their, you could also send them an email, raisingthebar@wgnradio.com, raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. Phone line and text line are open, 312-521-8600, 312-521-8600. I'm going to give an example. Let's say you pick a president, President Clinton, Bush 1, Bush 2, or President Obama. I'm sitting in a coffee shop, and I say, I don't agree with, and let's just take something that's topical right now. Forget about Obamacare. I'm a tree hugger, and I don't believe in the Keystone Pipeline, okay? And I'm sitting with a friend of mine who is in the steel business that makes hard rolled steel that goes into making 42-inch diameter pipe, and he wants that contract for that hot rolled steel to make that pipe. And he sees jobs at the steel mills. He sees transportation jobs. He sees tons of jobs. And I've got a tree hugger, and we're across the table having a soda. And it goes away from the policy, but it starts attacking the president. Okay? And like, I don't like him because, and I'm the steel mill guy, let's say. Oh, Obama, you know, if he kills this, you know, kills this bill, he's killing jobs and it's not good for the American people. And the tree hugger's like, well, if he doesn't kill this bill, we're going to have some duck I've never heard of migration patterns interrupted. And God forbid the duck has to fly four blocks out of its way to get to wherever the duck flies. Okay. And we start, and it starts getting heated. And then somebody says, I want to kill the guy. Okay, so now you've lost, because now you get two people talking. Not me. I'm not saying I want to kill. I'm just using this as an example. And then somebody sums out and says, I want to kill the president, right? Not a real smart thing to say, okay, at all, but especially in this environment. Now you've crossed the line, okay? You could disagree with the president of the United States on a lot of things, and I have. And I've said it publicly over the things that I disagree with. But I'm never going to go on the air or anytime say that I want to see anybody have anything happen to end anybody's life. But what happens when you cross that line, other than the police showing up and probably taking you out in handcuffs and going into a loony bin for a little psychological evaluation? When does that cross the line? When do you incite problems? Because you could start mob activity, right? And there's a lot of crazy people out there. Okay, when you say that, yeah, we should. And then they start going and then start driving to Washington. We start hopping fences and running into the White House while the Secret Service is on their phones and their walkie-talkies are off while the guard dog is sitting there.
I think the snipers might get
right,
you.
Right. I mean, but where do you cross the line?
Well, and that's a good question, because there are some limitations on what the First Amendment will protect. And one of those exceptions is when you incite illegal activity. Now, obviously, that's such a vague kind of phrase. The Supreme Court has had a couple of cases where they've tried to explain what that means. The first case, I think, was Brandenburg v. Ohio, and that was where they first were talking about the difference between inciting illegal activity. They used the clear and present danger standard before that, and they in Brandenburg they talked about the illegal activity has to be imminent, or imminent lawless action is the phrase that they used. That case actually involved the KKK, very controversial case, because the KKK, obviously not a nice group of people. And
especially if you're black or Jewish, right?
Big problem. Right. And they were, holding rallies and sometimes advocating violence.
Sure.
And so they had passed some regulations saying, look, you can't do that. You can't hold these rallies. You can't say some of these things. And the KKK filed suit. And the reason this decision was so controversial is because it really tried to further define what it meant to incite illegal activity. And that's where the Supreme Court said, okay, it has to be imminent. It can't just say in general, like, hey, at some point we should really overthrow the government, or hey, at some point we should break into the store and loot it. It had to be like the circumstances had to be such that the speech was designed to incite imminent illegal activity.
Okay, but I've seen rallies for the Ku Klux Klan. Okay, I've heard them say pretty obnoxious things, like, let's kill Jews and let's kill blacks. And, you know, these people shouldn't be running certain businesses. And, you know, the Jews are still, I heard this. I mean, I was there right now. They're not saying kill the Jew, and they're not saying string the Jew and the black guy up by the oak tree. But they are saying some pretty not so nice things, Amir. And, you know, it's okay. So, you know, the noose isn't over the branch,
yeah.
And they're not bringing me, the Jewish guy, and my friend, the black guy over there, to string me up, but they might as well be.
No.
And where do you say, you know, where do I'm like hop in the car and get the hell out of there?
Well, it's interesting because right now with this Virginia v. Black 2003 opinion, you know, there was a dissent by Justice Thomas. And Justice Thomas said, listen, enough is enough with this Ku Klux Klan type protest.
That's a shock. Right.
Right. Okay. You know, he says everybody knows what they're doing is designed to elicit some type of violence.
Sure.
And I've seen enough of it. You know, we try to say, when is the violence going to occur? Is it going to occur right now, which we don't want to have happen? Or is it going to occur, 3 months from now, which
planting
might be
the seeds,
which might be okay. But, you know, Thomas now in the dissent has come across, this was in 2003, and he said, all right, we know the Ku Klux Klan has designed their rallies, and it's not freedom of speech anymore. They're trying to be violent. They're trying to go after certain groups, and we need to put an end to it. But as the law stands right now, as long as they're not trying to elicit any immediate violence, it's going to be tough to come after them.
Want to add something to that?
You know, it's hard because there's a whole lot of scholarly articles on hate speech and what types of hate speech is protected by the First Amendment and what types aren't. And it kind of goes back to that quote that Amir said at the very beginning. You know, you might not agree with it, but unfortunately, that's kind of taking the good with the bad of the First Amendment. If they're not breaking any laws and if they're not inciting imminent violence, then unfortunately, they have the right to express their opinions, however abhorrent we might find them. Some of those same situations have actually been raised lately with the Ferguson protests. Some of the police have been saying that the protesters have been inciting illegal activity, and obviously the other side of the protesters saying no, we're exercising our freedom of speech. We're standing here and protesting what's going on in Ferguson, and demanding redress from the government. So it really is tough to figure out what is inciting mob activity, what is peaceful protest, what is exercising your right for freedom of speech and freedom to assemble.
Well, having a cop maybe sitting in a armed vehicle with a sniper rifle pointed at a lady who is unarmed holding up a sign probably doesn't do much to calm an already uptight crowd, rightly so. You know, they're upset and a member of their community was killed, okay, shot by a police officer. We're starting to learn now. Maybe it wasn't what everybody thought originally, and maybe the police officer's comments are now looking to maybe be substantiated, and he felt threatened and whatnot. Okay, with due process, everything will come out. Not saying that the people didn't have a right to be upset, but also maybe not having M16s pointed at people while you're standing behind an armed vehicle, it kind of throws a little gasoline on a situation, and all you need is a spark to blow it up, and a little bonfire starts into, now you're burning the town down.
It's a tough call. It really is, because you kind of, like what we were talking about earlier with the balancing act, you know, you have to balance the public interest of having, you know, a peace. You want to make sure there's stability and security. You want to make sure people feel safe in their homes, feel safe on the street.
Mm-hmm.
You also want to protect people's right to protest, to speak their minds if they feel, again, like you said, at this point, it doesn't even really matter what comes out later at trial, what really happened, because from a First Amendment standpoint, we're just trying to figure out, you know, where do you draw the line? Do you, you know, where is it that people can be out there and protest, and where did the police come in and say, okay, no, we're going to put some limitations on that? Because, when you're dealing with the First Amendment, it's really tricky.
Protesting is good. Burning down a strip mall is bad while you're protesting. And while you're not protesting, burning down a strip mall is bad. Because you know what? You got to go back to your homes, and the strip mall was servicing your community. So maybe we should think about burning things down that are offering products and services to your community. Call me crazy, but the dry cleaner and the shop I bought my cigs and the place I bought my gallon of milk and the other I went and got a Subway is now burnt out.
you burn it down one weekend and go to try to use it the next, it gets tough.
It gets tough. Yeah, unless you're looking for charcoal, you're fine. Crazy. All right, you're listening to Raising the Bar, sponsored by Konasek & Dillon. I'm going to take a short break. If you want to reach the law office of Konasek & Dillon, Konasek & Dillon, you can reach them at 630-262-9655, 630-262-9655. Send them an email, raisingthebar@wgnradio.com, raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. Welcome back to Raising the Bar, sponsored by the law offices of Konasek & Dillon. You could reach the law offices of Konasek & Dillon by calling 630-262-9655, 630-262-9655. You could reach the law offices of Konasek & Dillon via email by sending them an email to raisingthebar@wgnradio.com, raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. Or you visit the website, konasekdillonlaw.com. That's Konasek, K-O-N-I-C-E-K, Dillon, D-I-L-L-O-N, law, L-A-W, .com. And the phone number one more time at their office on 21 West State Street in the beautiful downtown area of Geneva is 630-262-9655, 630-262-9655. In studio with me is Amir Thomasby and Amanda Hamilton. Both of them are attorneys at the fine law offices of Konasek & Dillon. We're talking your freedom of speech. And again, I know I want to get into obscenity because I'm an expert at that. And that's why we're on a 20-second delay here, and Brian is constantly. They told Brian Jones, our producer, just keep your finger on that damn button, Brian. You never know this guy's going to go off. You know, we have no idea what he's going to say because he has no idea what he's going to say. So I want to get back to the freedom of speech again, okay, and the mob mentality, right? Because you get in a mob. You do what? You feel like you just bench press 450 pounds and you can lift a Volkswagen and nobody's going to hurt you until somebody zaps you with a rubber bullet between the eye. And although it's not going to kill you, it'll put you down. Well, it might kill you. Okay. And I've never been hit with a rubber bullet and have no plans of getting hit with a rubber bullet. But I think when it comes to that type of mob mentality, and I love my police officers, firefighters, EMTs, all my first responders, you know, right? You know, we all respect the job that they do.
Absolutely.
Because it's an impossible job to do because you can never make anybody happy all the time, especially when you're wearing a bulletproof vest with a shield on, okay? And if you're a police officer, you've got a hell of enough time as it is because you're a moving target to all the loony bins out there, okay? You know, because, you know, who are we going to take down? Let's pop a cop. That seems to be the force du jour nowadays, you know, the flavor of the month, which I quite don't understand, okay? But if you're a police officer, the type of training you have to go through to stand there while people are throwing eggs at you and spitting at you and saying horrendously horrific things about you, your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, and the daughter you don't even have, what do you have to do to make sure you don't want to take the billy club and pop them over the head and put them in the back of the paddy wagon and take them for a little spin around the block a couple of times while they're handcuffed to the steel bar up top, steel bar on top of the paddy, inside the paddy wagon. Not that that's ever happened before, only what I've heard about. Okay, and then not go too far because freedom of speech is regulated by the person at the spear of the point, and that's typically the police officer who's getting berated by people who are expressing their freedom of speech. So I want to hear your side of it, Amanda. Then I'm going to throw it to you, Amir, because that's a problem. All we saw with the Ferguson event, okay, and I'll call it an event because it's still unfolding. It was a bad situation for about 2 weeks. Hot and heavy. No matter what the cops did it wrong. And a lot of the things they did were, you know, they did wrong because I don't think they knew what the hell they were doing, okay, a lot of the times. And I think it just, the sensitivity, level of sensitivity raises so hard that if you don't move in 5 seconds, we're going to arrest you, okay? And if you're standing in a McDonald's, we all heard that story, right? You're standing in the McDonald's, all right, you know, are you eating? No, then leave. And the reporters were there that filed the story because it was free Wi-Fi. Okay, and there was an outlet where they could charge up their batteries to do their reporting. And all they were doing was doing their job. So what type of sensitivity training, if you were representing the police officers, you've got one police division, you've got another police division, what recommendation would you give people that are that want to strike back but can't strike back because they are there to protect? What type of advice do you give them to, like, not want to smack somebody up that upside the head?
Oh my goodness! You know, I'm not a psychologist.
But I am.
But
I want to hear your story. Yeah,
great.
Self-psychiatry. I self-medicate myself.
Okay. You know, I think police officers really, like you said, they really do have a very, very difficult job, and they find themselves in high intensity, very stressful situations a lot where they are being disrespected. I think the important thing for police officers to remember in a situation like Ferguson is you are going to have to take a lot. You're going to have a lot of patience. You're going to have to have a lot of tolerance, and you're going to have to remember exactly what you're standing there protecting. You know, you can't look at it as, oh, this person just threw something at me and therefore I'm offended. You have to stand there and remember, someone threw something at me and I am protecting their freedom of speech, and I'm grateful that I live in the United States where we have these kind of freedoms. And I'm not saying that's easy, because that's incredibly difficult. You know, the police officers are having to walk a very, very fine line of, like I said before, you know, protecting the public interest, protecting public safety, trying to make sure that everyone is okay, no one's getting hurt in mob activity, but also protecting the protesters, protecting their right to speak and to protest a situation. In Ferguson, I think they had they were trying to come up with a bunch of different ideas. You know, you can't blame them for lack of creativity.
Right.
You know, like you mentioned, the you can't stand for more than 5 seconds rule. Well, I can understand where they're coming from. They're trying to minimize the risk of mob activity. But again, that's what we were talking about before. That's a curtail on your freedom of speech, freedom to assemble. So you got to be very careful with that. So obviously the ACLU is getting involved in that and sort of looking at that policy as to whether or not that's violating the First Amendment. You know, I think police officers have it tough. I don't think there is a right answer. That's why they say the Constitution is a living, breathing document, because it's constantly being refined and further discussed by the courts.
I think is it safe to say that the law schools at Northern Illinois University and the law schools at Valparaiso University and Notre Dame, where you went, and I don't know if your undergrads got law schools, but the law schools out there come, you know, maybe not this semester, because it happened this semester, but next semester as they're planning, are probably going to have a part of the syllabus is going to have Ferguson, Missouri, okay, case study, let's discuss.
No question.
And what can we learn from that? And again, if you don't want to take the question, what can the police do, you know, like Amanda did, if you want to take another angle, what would the case study be like then? Let, you know, go that direction. I'll throw something completely different, because you sat there for 4 minutes while she was answering the question, preparing yourself, and I don't want you to be prepared. So if you're a professor and you're preparing the syllabus for next semester, and you put down Ferguson, Missouri, what are the first three things that pop into your head to start the discussion with the kids that are trying to learn law?
Sure. I mean, you're going to start with what regulations can you put on these type of protests? I mean, that's where it's going to begin. And we've already had a, whatever you want to call it, intellectual, non-intellectual discussion, David, about how the government can regulate certain things. But, you know, you said it right. It comes down to, you got to look at it from the perspective of the guy that's actually enforcing the laws. They're the ones that are in the trenches. They're the ones that are down there. What can you say or do to them so that they understand what, number one, the First Amendment means, and number two, how can we regulate in as minimal as possible what's going on? And just like Amanda said, it's tough to make any type of fine line. I mean, you have to look at things from each separate basis. Ferguson's one thing. There's going to be another thing in 5 years that we're going to say, all right, what did we learn from this? And I think if anything that we learned from, you know, what happened in Ferguson is that our lawmakers and the people that enforce the laws who I would say overall do a great job. You have to be careful at any type of knee-jerk reactions. You know, I used to play a lot of college athletics, and the first thing you do when you see a bad call, or you're sitting in the stands and you see a bad call, is you turn around and you yell and you scream and you cuss. And if you take a step back and think about it, is that the proper way to regulate or to go about what happened here?
Absolutely. If it was a bad call, absolutely. There's no question. Especially if it was a bad call against your team, you are absolutely justified for freedom of speech to be firing at them. But I get it. But again, you've got that fine line, and it's a conversation we need to further have, and it needs to evolve, because it's going to happen again. Okay, and you don't know where, you know, you don't want to think we're going to have another terrorist attack here in the United States, but eventually, someday, unfortunately, the odds are against us not happening, because there are just so many whack jobs out there, and you could do everything you can to minimize. Right? On 9/11, when was the anniversary of 9/11? I walked out of the Tribune Tower here, and I saw the cops looking in all of the
And I saw a cop walking by, and he stopped, and he was looking at everything a lot more closely than they usually did. I'm in and out of here every week. And I'm like, what's going on? Is there a problem? And he's like, you know, the anniversary of 9/11 coming up, and we're taking a closer look of everything because of ISIS and everything else going on, looking in the planters, looking around things. He's like, you know, we're constantly vigilant about looking, but, you know, our senses are a little more heightened right now because of the anniversary of the whack jobs out there for 9/11. Let's get into obscenity because we're running out of time. Okay, what is your definition of obscenity? We'll start with Amir this time. What is your definition of obscenity?
Well, it depends on if we're talking about in the public or at a sports game. I guess it would change right from one to the other.
Public.
When we're talking about the public, an obscenity is something you know, that paints you say with malice. That's false. That's offensive.
Okay.
And, you know, when you talk about obscenities, you talk about attacking an individual, things of that nature.
Okay. You want to add something?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're talking about the courts talk a lot about obscenity in terms of when you're talking about pornography or something that, you know, they're trying to determine should that be censored or not. And obviously, you have the famous Supreme Court line, you know, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. So the courts have kind of played with that a little bit because there is no specific definition of, you know, what is something that's pornographic that's subject to censorship and that is not protected by the First Amendment. You know, the United States Supreme Court, I think it was the Miller v. California decision, they talked a little bit about expounding upon when is something deemed obscene that's not subject to protections under the First Amendment. And one of the things I looked at was, is it something that on a community standard is seen as shameful or as offensive on a community, using a community standard? And then the other thing that they'll look at is, could any reasonable person perceive that as having artistic value? So I know recently there's this big hubbub about Kim Kardashian did some sort of magazine cover or something.
Yeah, with her rear end exposed.
And my goodness.
She should just go away. I mean, she just
you know, I can't say I've seen it. I read about
it. I have.
Okay, well, so for example, something like that. Some people are saying that that's obscene. You know, nudity and such and such, that's obscene to some people.
But wait. You could walk into the art museum, okay, and you could see the same painted picture, you know, the same pose, right? That's 200 years old in a painting with some lady with a gigantic rear end like Kim Kardashian, right? It's the same thing, but and they were doing it 200 years ago. And it's hanging in a museum.
But that's exactly why the United States Supreme Court was so smart about it, by including that caveat of, could a reasonable person see it as art? Because they want to make sure that they're not, like I said before, you don't want to be restricting too much speech. You don't want your regulation to be overly broad. So they kind of have that artistic exception in there. And that kind of gives the courts trouble sometimes, because obviously what a person's view of art can differ from person to person.
All right, well, I'm going to work my way up the female body, okay, and go to the breasts, because that's one of my favorite topics, okay? So if you, let's say that I'm Demi Moore's daughter and I'm Bruce Willis's daughter and I want to go topless in New York City, I can. No problem. And she proved it, right? Because women could go topless in New York City, because men can take their shirts off if it's hot, and they can walk around topless and it's fine exposing their breasts. And I forgot her name, Willis or Ryder, Reamer, or whatever the heck her name is. She's walking around New York topless, and it's okay in New York. But the women walked around here, right? And they got ticketed. And now they're fighting it. It's against their First Amendment right. Topless women walking around the city of Chicago. Are you for it or against it, Amir? I want you to go on record.
Make sure his wife is listening.
Yeah, I can't go on record to
Your wife walking around topless. Are you for it or against it?
David, I think you can see the look on my face. Right. And you probably know where I stand.
I've never seen a shade of color that red anymore. We're going to call that color red, Amir.
All right. You know, I don't have an opinion one way or another whether I'm for it or against it. But I will say that, you know, recently we had the gal on the beach here.
Yeah.
That was walking around topless, and you know, the police officer came up and find her, and she's fighting it. She's saying,
good for her.
Well, hold on, just like you said, David, the guys can walk around topless, why can't I? And the ordinance in the city of Chicago, interestingly enough, says that, you know, you have to be covered up to, you know, they use some fancy word, but we're talking about up to the nipple here, really, right? And so you can breastfeed, for example, but you can't walk around completely topless in Chicago, and she's fighting it. She's saying it's an expression of her speech, and you know, I don't disagree with her.
How do you feel about it?
Oh my gosh, you know, I'm torn.
Should women be allowed, like men? I'll break it down real simple. In your professional opinion, I'm not trying to embarrass you. If a woman, if it's a hot day, and it's 95 degrees outside in Pioneer Court here, and it's 110 with the humidity, because it, you know, it gets a little humid here in the summertime, and I walk out, you know, and a buddy of mine wants to take his shirt off. He's a guy, and he's like, "Damn, is it hot?" He takes off his shirt. He's walking around to cool down. Shouldn't his girlfriend is walking next to him, whip off her shirt and take off her bra and do the same thing? Is there anything wrong with that?
So, you know, honestly, I just prefer everybody keep their shirts on.
See, I would go the opposite. I would
just feel much more comfortable that way. But, you know, the irony and kind of the paradox of that situation is because she, you know, she's being fined because it is a violation of the ordinance. But it kind of, in evaluating whether or not that constitutes an obscenity that's not subject to First Amendment protections, again, it goes back to that community standard. Well, the reason it's kind of a paradox for her is because what she, I believe, is trying to do is to change the community standard to make it more acceptable. So it kind of presents an interesting issue for the courts, and I'm looking forward to see where this case goes, because I think the courts are going to have to determine, okay, well, if it's currently against a community standard that it's not accepted, but she's trying to advocate for a change, you know, is that subject to First Amendment protection? I don't know. I'm interested to see what kind of arguments are raised in that.
She's got a future in politics because she completely did not answer my question. That was fantastic. She completely she's like, "There's the alley. Let me get the hell out of here."
I said I want everyone to keep their clothes
that
on.
That's fantastic. Just, you know. I love it. 312-521-8600. 521-8600. 312. You're listening to Raising the Bar, sponsored by the law offices of Konasek and Dillon. You could send them an email at raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. You could call their offices at 21 West State Street in beautiful downtown Geneva at 630-262-9655. You could visit their website, KonasekDillonLaw.com. KONICEK is Konasek. Dillon, DILLON. Law is LAW. Put those three words together and then put a .com next to it. You'll be at their website. You wanted to add something to the conversation, Amir.
I was just going to say, I'll go on record and predict that she's going to win that case, the topless lady.
And do you? But then it gets back to, is it proper? What did you say? Is it acceptable? Is it what's the phrase that you use? Is it
community standard? Is it shameful? Standard? Is it offensive?
How do we change that?
That's a good question. I think that's what she's trying to do.
So it's okay in New York.
Right.
Because they're animals in New York to walk around.
Because this is the Midwest.
Because we're wholesome. We don't do anything off the line here, man. We are straight down the line. But so she's starting a movement. And there was a whole nother industry started where women, a couple of ladies up north, made bikini tops that were the shade of women's breasts with nipples on them. Okay, where the areola section was on a bathing suit, they made bikinis to look, even though it looked like they were naked, and he took a double take. I saw the picture, and I got the reaction. I'm flipping through the trip. I'm like, what the hell is that? And I'm just like, wow, now we're going to, you know, we're going towards the British Mirror or whatever that's got the naked women on page 36. I'm like, holy smoly, you know, what happened overnight here in Chicago? But it completely generated an entire new industry of a bathing suit line, and good for them, right? That's their way of protesting the system, saying, all right, you want it? Here, is this obscene? No, it's a bathing suit top, right? What's the difference with I'm with dummy with an arrow pointing next to the guy next to me? It falls into that. So we got 4 minutes left. I want to give you a minute and a half to talk about free speech and whatever you want for people to remember, and because I know Amir's got a big football game coming up this weekend and he's all nervous, so he needs an extra minute and a half to prepare. So what would you like to tell our listeners about their freedoms?
Well, you know, I think I think when you think about the freedom of speech and all the freedoms that you're granted under the First Amendment, I think Amir in the very beginning noted that speech is just one of them. But I do think it's one of the most important. I think you have to compare the freedoms that we have here with our speech to the freedoms that people have or don't have in other countries. I think you need to appreciate it. I think you need to respect it. I think the hardest thing about the freedom of speech is accepting all of it, the good and the bad, that, you know, part of having it means that you've got to sometimes suck it up and listen to someone advocate mm-hmm. for something that you would spend the rest of your life advocating against. But that means you have to have tolerance. You have to have acceptance. And it's hard. It's really hard, but it's important.
Because we all become better for it.
Absolutely.
You know, I listen to different types of radio stations. I listen to WCPT for the liberal side. I listen to the, you know, IND and LS for the conservative side. And it couldn't be more further North Pole, South Pole. But I get a little something out of each part of the argument. Might disagree or agree, but I think you're right. We need to have the dialogue. Amir?
Yeah, no, I agree. And the thing about the First Amendment is that people forget is it's brought about so many good changes. And I kind of started with that. And I start with this, I go back to the civil rights movement. Without allowing those people to go and participate in those huge protests in Washington, sure. D.C. and everywhere else, I mean, this country may not have changed in the positive way up to the point where now we have a black president. I mean, these things come about, these changes, because people hear what other people have to say. And initially, how many people disagreed with the civil rights movement? Well, over half the country,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And now we're looking at a country that's progressive in the right direction. And that's all because of the First Amendment.
Amir Thomas B., Amanda Hamilton, thank you for spending your Friday afternoon in here talking about the freedom of speech. If you want a podcast of this show, you could go to WGN.FM to download it in about an hour. Our boy Brian will have it all edited up and uploaded. You could also download a podcast of previous shows. You were on 2 weeks ago, Amanda. So if you liked what Amanda had to say, you could download her show that she was on a couple of weeks ago. And Amir, you did all right. Not bad for a rookie. Not
Thanks,
bad.
Man.
Yeah, the last guy we had in here passed out after the first segment. So yeah, we had the paddles in here to get you going, the oxygen. So you did really good. 312-521-8600. I don't know why I'm giving that number out. You could call Gary Meyer in about 7 minutes at that number. But if you want to reach the law offices of Conasec and Dillon, who sponsored this show, you could go and call them at 630-262-9655, 630-262-9655. You could send them an email at raisingthebar@wgnradio.com, raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. You could also visit their website, ConisecDillonLaw.com, KonisecDillonLaw.com, 630-262-9655. This has been Raising the Bar. See you next Friday.